what is this thing called love? I know it's a many-splendored thing, but what are we talking about? I don't mean the human love that comes in different varieties, varieties that have Greek names that Paul so well described in his wonderful story. Eros, philia, agape. In our services, in our hymnals, in UU World, in Touchstones, we encounter a big L love. A love somehow external to ourselves. A cosmic love. We sing, there is a love holding us. And love knocks and waits for us to hear. Reverend Andy Burnett, minister at Valley UU in Chandler, Arizona, where Linda and I attend in the winter, most winters, closes his service with this benediction. May the universe pour forth its love upon you. VUU, like many UU congregations, recites a covenant every Sunday, which begins, love is the doctrine of this church. Consider these words from Reverend Rebecca Ann Parker. Even when our hearts are broken by our own failure or the failure of others coming into our lives, even when we have done all we can and life is still broken, there is a universal love that has never broken faith with us and never will. Now, I have a little voice in the corner of my mind that, when I hear these words, pops up with, what are they talking about? What could that possibly mean? I'm not a theist, and having it be okay not to be a theist sealed the UU deal for me. But I have a suspicious mind. And that little voice goes on to ask, is Big L love UU code for God? A way of sneaking God past us non-theists? So I have pondered, struggled actually, to grasp what this Big L love is pointing at. What common experience the word love is gathering up for us to share. It will probably surprise you that when I began asking, what do we mean by love, my mind jumped immediately to Harry Harlow and his studies on mother love with infant rhesus monkeys and terry cloth mothers. I showed the video of Harry Harlow being interviewed about his early work by CBS's Chris Collingwood, every semester I taught introductory psychology, which was every semester. I can recite it, close my eyes and see it. How many of you saw that video at one time or another? Yes. In the video, Harlow shows that the infant monkey prefers the terry cloth mother to the wire mother, and Collingwood asks Harlow, is this really love? And Harry Harlow responds, well, what do we mean when we say a baby loves its mother? Certainly, we mean that it gets a great sense of security in the presence of the mother. Now, Mr. Collingwood, wouldn't you say that if you frightened a baby and it went running to its mother, was comforted, and then all the fear disappeared and was replaced by a complete sense of security that that baby loved its mother? Harlow, see, I told you. Harlow and his students built a scary mechanical monster to test this. Do you remember the monster with the big, and it went like this? It clanked and clattered. In the video, he goes on to show a terrified infant monkey springing onto the terry cloth mother, pressing its body against her, then relaxing, sliding down, and turning to make threat chirps at the scary monster, secure and emboldened. From Harlow's work, let's take a giant leap. Not in time, because they were contemporaries, but in abstraction to theologian Paul Tillich. In Love, Power, and Justice, Tillich offers this definition of love. Love is the drive toward the unity of the separated. Love manifests its greatest power there where it overcomes the greatest separation. He goes on to say, fulfilled love is, at the same time, extreme happiness and the end of happiness. The separation is overcome. But without the separation, there is no love and no life. Back to Harlow's monkeys. The test for Harlow that the baby loved its mother was not that it clung to it for long periods, but that contact with the mother both comforted and emboldened the infant. Both Harlow and Tillich are pointing out that we must be separate, independent agents in order for connection, for community, for belonging to be precious, to be something we seek. Love, then, for both Harlow and Tillich, is the promise of connection, of communion, that promise which emboldens us as independent agents. Something else about Harlow's infant monkeys grabs my attention. Just imagine that we could ask one of those babies, does your terry cloth mother love you? I'm sure the answer would be, yes, she does. She loves me bunches of bananas to the moon and back. Well, what are we to make of that? We know that the terry cloth mother can't love the baby in the way we understand a mother's love. But what works for the infant monkey is the experience of connection, its capacity, the infant's capacity to be connected. So another way of understanding love is the deep and abiding conviction that connection is to be had. Dr. Glenn Thomas Rideout is choral director at First UU in Ann Arbor. His poem, God is Not a Noun, is on the Quest webpage. Here is one stanza. We're getting Michelangelo all wrong. God is not the bearded one surrounded by angels floating over the Sistine. He is not Adam with his muscled back pressing the earth. No. God is the closing inch of space between their reaching fingers. So, is big L love code for God? Yes. Could be. Maybe. No. In the worship materials provided by Touchstones, there is this prayer. The light of love surrounds us. Love enfolds us. The power of love protects us. Love watches over us. Wherever we are, love is. It is adapted from the Unity Prayer, and I looked that up via Google and discovered that the word love had simply been substituted for the word God. Now, my pondering about this took me to a metaphor introduced by sociologist and theologian Peter Berger. His metaphor, The Sacred Canopy, which is also the title of his book. Berger is suggesting that religion is how humans project their sense of the sacred, their understanding of what really matters, their ultimate concern, to use Tillich's phrase, onto the cosmos. He says, religion is the human enterprise by which a sacred cosmos is established. If we accept that there is and always will be a gap between what we understand and the actual nature of things, how the universe actually works, God, if you wish, then imagine the sacred canopy in that gap and painted on it like a mural, our sense, our conviction, our faith about what's on the other side. With this metaphor in mind, we can understand that Unitarian Universalists, particularly Universalists, are choosing a specific and special paintbrush when they say love instead of God. Love is both a noun and a verb. Love leaves room for various visions, theist and non-theist, and honors that most canonical of Protestant convictions, the priesthood of all believers. What they are projecting onto the sacred canopy is a deep-seated confidence that the universe is good, that we are woven deeply into its fabric, that we belong here, that we are created to be connected and to be happy. Victoria Safford makes this useful distinction. The religious life is about the practice of remembering the bonds that bind us to each other, to one another. Religio, like ligament, the sinews that hold us in community, gather us in love, unite us for justice. The religious life binds us to each other, while the spiritual life connects us one by one to a larger love, to holiness, to mystery, to God. There it is, a larger love. Last Sunday you heard Reverend Scott Prinster choose a larger love to capture his sense of, and I quote Scott, the greater reality, the larger love that exists beneath it all, holding you and holding us all in its mysterious embrace, end quote. Let us return to Harlow's Rhesus Monkeys one more time. The terry cloth mother was able to comfort and embolden the infant, but she wasn't enough for it. These babies had serious social problems as they matured, and the terry cloth raised females were terrible mothers to their own babies. What was missing? Interaction and reciprocity. I think one of the most important lessons from the Harlow studies is the effect that these rejected infants had on their rejecting mothers. These second generation infants persisted in trying to make contact with the terry cloth raised mother, in spite of being stomped on and pushed away. Then, if these terry cloth raised mothers got pregnant a second time, there was an incredible turnaround. They became loving, even overprotective mothers. Tillich might have invoked the concept of grace. We need to feel, we need to be convinced that we live in a sacred cosmos that responds to our presence, our being, that we are held in the grasp of creation, that we belong, that we are connected, woven into the web of existence. For some of us, this need is satisfied by belief in a personal God. Did you ever sing, "And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own"? Have you been comforted by the words, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul"? For others of us, the responsiveness of the cosmos is in the gurgling of a stream, the cold caress of snowflakes, the nodding of the daisy, the glorious song of a cardinal on a February morning, a baby's laughter, or the knowledge that we are made of stardust. Goodness knows we are all too aware of our separateness. Sometimes that separateness, that aloneness, is almost overwhelming to the soul, a monster clanking and clattering. No wonder, then, that we celebrate the redemptive moments when we feel with certain confidence that we are held in a deeper love, when we feel a profound connection, that we are embedded in a universe throbbing with a larger love. Redemptive moments from which we emerge both comforted and emboldened. Blessed be.